reading from the Jiva Dharma, Nitya Dharma and History. I think it's chapter 10. So only that. So I'll read Nayana Ratna. Excuse me. All right, that is clear, but why do you oppose the killing of animals in sacrifice when the Shastras support it? Omiganitimadam dasya jnanam jana shalakaya raksu anmulitam yena asmai sri gurave namaha sita tanya manobhistam sapitam yena bhutare Sayambhu papidamayam yadati svapadantikam pancha kalpa tarupyascha vipashindu bayevacha patitanam bhavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo nama Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Srivasade Gaur Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, greetings from Vrindavan. Just every day, so that more people are coming. Bryn from Yogamaya is here for 3 or 4 days with Lisa Adams, another nice person from New York, with Molly Davidson and Alexander Forsyth. And Dr. Alex Seibel will come in a few days, and it's just such a nice group of people. I actually started giving class twice a day. We have a nice, really nice spiritual community, and we go out every day also. And then as soon as they go, I'll take a break and go to Govardhan and stay with Niranjan Swami, who's there. So most of the people that are listening are familiar with the story. It's about Babaji's very saintly people who've renounced the world, that live in an idyllic setting in Gojram, one of the islands in Navadvip, and somehow or other, Krishna, it's a proper, calls it a transcendental arrangement. He links certain people with certain people. And if even though they're chanting in this grove, various people come and become Krishna conscious. And according to their mindset, their conditioning, they need a various tattva subject to enlighten them. Often that enlightenment comes in the form of having their doubts cleared, or even sometimes debate. Sometimes a person who is inimical comes and debates them. But anyway, through the Jiva Dharma, we're getting all the tattvas as subjects in Krishna consciousness. And the present story is about one professor who is in generations of generations of people who are personalists, but worship Vishnu with a Vaishnava mantra. His system is called Panchaposhana. The goal is impersonal, but you pick one of five deities to meditate on, to steady your mind. And with the purpose of transcending that and understanding, or your misconception is that the deities are just Brahman in the mode of goodness. I don't know if they're, I don't even understand the logic behind their philosophy. But anyway, what appears to be happening historically is that before Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Navadvipa is mostly logicians and shastras, materialists, and actually and people who are just trilogicians. And it had a very, very strong caste culture, where the Brahmins claimed certain privileges due to birth, not due to their qualification, and they're very attached to it. And there are appropriate hierarchical systems in marriage, maybe even husband and wife, or in an institution, in varnashram, in occupation, in so many ways. And that's necessary. There has to be a division in society for organization and decision making. A lot of times you see temples want to run by committee, but it just doesn't exactly work because it's inefficient to make decisions that way. So anyway, it's a necessity, but it also can be abused. And people who have a hierarchical position, it's such a natural tendency to rely on the position rather than one's qualification, especially in Kali Yuga. And anyway, this is basically the setting. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu comes and he disturbs that because he preaches pure bhakti and he preaches the status of one is their qualification, their qualities in the work they do and not their birth. And he also preaches monotheism, that there's one God, and so many things that are antithetical according to this Brahmin culture that was dominating at the time. But he made, and this is historically, he made a tremendous inroads and became very eager to establish the respectability of Vaishnavism. And it was very powerful, his influence. So some people started preaching against it, and this Harihara, this professor, he goes to a lecture and he hears that this philosophy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is a new thing, Vaishnavism itself is a new thing. So the question comes up, what is the history of Vaishnavism? And Harihara goes to this great logician, Nyayanaratna, and they decide that they would go and basically challenge the Vaishnavas, which are generally led, at least in argument and debate, by Vaishnav Das Babaji, formerly Sannyas Thakur. He used to be a Mayavadi sannyasi, and he used to be a somebody. Now he's a full, humble Vaishnava. So we've been in the debate, and Nayanaratna is trying to show that Vaishnavism is a historical phenomena, And Vaishnava Das quotes from the beginning of time, starting with Lord Brahma, that Vaishnavism is the Nitya Dharma. It's not historical. It's the eternal nature of the living entity. Our view of religion is not a particular faith. It's the nature of the soul. And as the soul is eternal, its nature is eternal, and that nature is to serve God. That's the most intrinsic, that's the most inherent aspect of consciousness. Most inherent aspect of consciousness is to serve and to love. The fruition of the perfection of consciousness is love. Love means service. That's not a historical phenomena. That is an existential, an ontological phenomena. That's the very nature of being. That's the very nature of God. And Vaishnava Das Babaji shows through history how it's a misconception to think that this is some kind of new thing. Although he does, I won't say concede, but he explains that what is given by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is a very, very high revelation of the nature of the soul, which is prema bhakti. And it's not just to love God, it's to love God intimately. Kevala bhakti, Sri Guru Charana Padma Kevala bhakti, it's Kevala bhakti. It's love God intimately, without any distance, without any fear, without any obligation, which means to love Krishna, who does not appear in a majestic role that distances one, obligates one, or creates fear in the relationship. And that this is the fullest manifestation of God. Anyway, the discussion is going on. And Jayaratna, the Brahmins don't agree with this, but then Vaishnava Das Babaji, again, he's such a scholar. He quotes in history how so many Vaishnavas were Brahmins, from Nityananda to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they go way back. And then they discuss Mayavadi philosophy, and Vaishnava Das Babaji explains that actually the doctrine of Mayavad is not supported in the Shastra, and those statements that are espoused to present that if you examine them carefully, that conception that they're impersonal will be dispelled. So now, and then they discuss worship of the demigods and respect, and he says that the Vaishnavas respected, they don't disrespect demigods, but they don't have the misconceptions that demigods are the Supreme Lord. That they're actually devotees. So now, today's question is really, so he says, now why do you oppose killing of animals in sacrifice when the Shastra is supported, even in the Vedas, is sanctions for meat eating? So why do you oppose that? Because they were also meat. meat eaters, the nature of religion, and I always make this point, and this is so pertinent to ourselves, is that the nature of the false ego, which we're so covered with, which gives us the view to see things as objects for our own sense gratification, it so much appropriates things, takes things for the false ego. So even religion, even truth, which is the truth, is antithetical to the false ego. The truth is it opposes the real ego, that I'm servant to Krishna. And it passes judgment on the false ego. So when you have a bona fide spiritual path or religion, it will be in opposition to some of your attachments. So rather than feel guilty about that, people try to use philosophy and reasoning and database and picking out to somehow support their attachments, even in the name of religion. So it's not surprising that meat eating became widespread in India, because people are impassioned and they want to eat meat. It's not surprising that after Prabhupada left, there's so many challenges to the doctrine of pure bhakti based on the envy and ego of individuals who can't fully surrender to God and need a doctrine to support that. We see it even since Prabhupada left. How it's a constant struggle by dedicated and brahminical people and sincere and dedicated leaders to keep the teachings of Prabhupada and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu intact. So Vaishnava Das is going to deal with this. It is not the intention of Shastra that animals should be killed. The Vedas declare, Ma Hinsyat Sarvabhutane, one should not commit violence to any living entity. The statement forbids violence to animals, because the basic principle of spiritual life is to control the mind. And the grossest impulse of the mind is to exploit others. There's yama niyam. Yama means to control the mind in relationship to others. That's called rules. And then to control mind niyam, to control mind in relationship to yourself, it's called regulation. So the first one is nonviolence, because if you can't control your mind in relationship to others and the exploitation of others, there is no way to move forward in the controlling of the mind and the principles of spiritual life. And in fact, ahimsa, or nonviolence, it's described in the Yoga Sutra, it's like an elephant's footprint. Every other principle of spirituality must fit within that. For example, truthfulness. If your truth is going to harm someone, then the higher principle is ahimsa. and to lie in the name of truth. Someone's coming and looking for someone to kill them, and they say, you know where they are, you say no, and it's a lie, then that's okay. Because if truth violates nonviolence, then better not to be truthful. As long as a human being is strongly influenced by the modes of passion and ignorance, people would be spontaneously driven to illicit connection with the opposite sex, meat eating, and intoxication. Such people do not ask the Vedas to sanction their activities. The purpose of the Vedas is not to promote such activities, but rather to curb them. Because the Vedas is to transcend false ego. And these are the core symptoms of false ego. A lack of mercy, a lack of austerity, a lack of truthfulness, and a lack of cleanliness. So, when people are situated in a mode of goodness, they can naturally refrain from animal slaughter, sexual indulgence, and intoxication. I guess it's not appropriation here that's mentioned, because in the Bhagavad Gita it says, Dhamma viruho bhuteshu kamosti bhartarsiba, that I am sex life according to religious principles. So this is indulgent. Until that point, the Vedas prescribe various means to control such tendencies. For this reason, they sanction association with the opposite sex through vivaha yajna, the killing of animals in sacrifice, and the drinking of wine in particular ceremonies. By practicing in this way, these tendencies will wane in a person, and he will eventually be able to give them up. So this is the beauty of the Vedic culture. The whole idea is to elevate the mind and bring the mind to sattva, to a position of clarity and enlightenment, where one could actually control oneself and understand things properly and execute them through discipline. So the way it does it is, if you have a particular tendency or impulse, then the way to transcend it is not necessarily to renounce it, because if you renounce a strong impulse, let's say sex desire, then you will think about it more. And if you indulge the impulse, you'll also think about it more. So what the Vedas do is regulate the impulse, or give some allowance for the satisfaction of that. So what that does is it pacifies the mind so that one doesn't become absorbed in these illicit desires that actually bring one away from the self, because their impulse is so strongly born from the false ego to reinforce the false ego, to create some scars and desires that fortify the false ego. So there's an allowance, but most of the time there's the restriction. You know, sex within marriage, or sex for procreation, or so what happens is, when there's a regulation, the desire is satisfied in a way that you don't have to think of it. But at the same time, most of the time, you're practicing detachment and learning to control the impulse and feeling the happiness of goodness in doing so. So it completely reorients the mind to detachment, even though you're satisfying those desires. So this is what he's saying. This is the true purport of the Vedas. They do not recommend the killing of animals, but their intention is expressed in these words of Srimad Bhagavatam 11.5.11. Loke vyavah, yeah. Loke vyavaya nishamadhyaseva idastijanta nihitattitodana. It is observed that people in this world have a natural tendency towards intoxication, meat eating, and sexual enjoyment, but Shastras cannot sanction their engagements in such activities. Therefore, special provisions have been given whereby some association with the opposite sex is permitted through marriage. Some eating of flesh is permitted through the performance of sacrifice, and the drinking of wine is permitted through the ritual known as Sotramani Yajna. So, of course, I mean, the natural question will come up is, if in the Hare Krishna movement, we're renouncing intoxication. We're renouncing meat eating, but allow the regulation of sex desire. So they're not really the same. For one, sex desire is the most powerful impulse. And its regulation has a purpose which can... activity has a purpose which can be engaged in service, which is to produce children. So that fits within the scope of bhakti, where meat eating has no altruistic purpose, can't be engaged in devotional service, and is completely steeped in the mode of ignorance, as is intoxication. The purpose of such injunction is to restrain the licentious tendencies of the general populace and to establish them in moral conduct. The intrinsic purpose of the Vedas in making such provisions is to draw people away from such activities altogether. So the purpose is to give up those activities that fortify one in the bodily consciousness of life, but the strategy to do so is what Vaishnava Das is saying. He's therefore saying, yes, there are Shastric injunctions, but this is the reason why there are Shastric injunctions. And come in. Yeah. 1 second. Okay. Oh, what's that? 4 o'clock. One thing is, you have to tell me if you want to go to Govardhan and Radhakund tomorrow. Yeah. It would be from, we leave at 5 a.m. and we get back at about lunch. So you wouldn't be able to do your work that day. What?
It's possible.
Okay, you have to make the decision. What?
Okay.
Yeah. I'll be right with the people in the class.
I just want to offer you
on the
Sprouts
today. I don't think there's any Sprouts class.
You.
There's no? You will offer the Sprouts. This is just thanks. Okay, let's go on. Let's get to the end of this because it seems quite interesting as far as I can see. The nice knob conclusion regard to this, there is no objection of a person whose nature is ruled by passion and ignorance kills animals. Whoa. I got to figure this one out. Okay, he's talking to Narayanaratne, saying there's, to those people, there's a sanction. And, you know, there's a regulation in the Vedic society for that. Not indiscriminate opening of slaughterhouses, but for those people, there's, and you can see in society, let's say Krishna consciousness spread very wide. Whether, let's say, you ran the government, whether you can stop meat eating, we can stop cow slaughter, and we can, or we can make some provision for those people. That's good. However, a person who is situated in the mode of goodness should not do so, because causing harm to other jivas is an animalistic propensity. Sri Narada has explained this in Srimad Bhagavatam 1.13.47. Astani sahastanam apadani chatushpadam aguna tattva mahatam jivo jivasya jivanam. Living entities without hands are prey for those with hands. Life forms without legs are food for the four-legged. Small creatures are substance for large one. In this way, one living entity is the means of existence for another. The verdict of Manu Samhita, Manu Smriti 556, is also very clear. Mamsa Bhakshani Doshe Namadhya. Abstinence from activities such as sexual indulgence, meeting, and intoxication yields highly beneficial results, although a human being is naturally inclined to them. Nyayaratna, yes. Why do the Vaishnavas object to the, okay, the sraddha, sraddha ceremony and other activities that are meant to repay one's debt to the forefathers? Okay, we'll just finish with this. It's just a paragraph or two. People who are intent on carrying out prescribed pious duties perform the sraddha ceremony in accordance with the karma pranda section of the Vedas. Vaishnavas have no objection to this, but Shastras declare. You have to understand, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was writing this hundreds of years ago, and there's so much opposition in society. It seems like his son, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, was more, you know, boom, boom, direct. You know, for a different time. But he, at the particular time he's writing this, they're just establishing Vaishnavism as credible. So they can't militaristically attack the attachments of people. Yes, in a very subtle way. So here's the, so they look at the Vaishnavas also, and they don't do these rituals for the forefathers. And then he explains that we don't have any objection to them But for Vaishnava, it's not necessary. And he quotes Srimad Bhagavatam, Devarshti Bhutapta Nirnam Patrinam Nikinkaro Nayam Vini Chirajam Sabhartmana Yasharam Sharayam Yatomakundam Parihityakartam. Okay, when a human being gives up the ego of independence of Bhagavan and takes full shelter of Sri Mukunda as the supreme refuge, he is released from his debts to the devas, the sages, the general living entities, family members, mankind, and to the forefathers. Such a devotee no longer remains subordinate to such personalities, nor is he bound to their service. Consequently, devotees who have taken shelter of Bhagavan are not required to perform the sadha ceremony and other karmakanda activities meant for gaining release from debt to one's forefathers. They are instructed to worship Bhagavan, to offer Bhagavat Prasad to the forefathers, and to honor Bhagavat Prasad with their friends and relatives. Okay? Okay, I have to go, but Rati, are you still there?
Yes, Maharaj.
I just need to talk to you about that. You talked about your uncle, you know?
Yeah.
And maybe you have my phone number, or if you can give me your phone number, I can just call you back in a second. It'll cost me about 10 cents. Okay, I'll call you back in a second just to see if anybody would like to say hello quickly.
Hare Krishna, Guru Maharaj, this is Bajrade.
Bajrade, Hare Bol. Thank you. I'd love to just say your name. And there's a god sister here of yours that's helping me call Jaisi Radhe. Those are beautiful names. Okay, anybody else like to say hello? Only Gail has perfected the mute and unmute function. Okay, I'll have to go. I got to call Rati quickly. Okay, Herbal.